You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to our first of four podcasts on integrating disease-modifying therapies in the management of Alzheimer's disease, hosted by Med Learning Group. Our overarching goal is to support primary care physicians, neurologists, psychiatrists, geriatricians, and other multidisciplinary team members who care for patients with Alzheimer's. This podcast series will focus on timely screening and diagnosis of mild cognitive impairment and early AD, and the integration of disease-modifying treatments in clinical practice. My name is Surabhi Dangi Garimella, and I'll be the host for today's podcast. In this first episode, we will explore the important role played by PCPs as part of a multidisciplinary team in the diagnosis and management of MCI and early AD. With that, it's my pleasure to introduce and welcome our program chair, Dr. George Grossberg, and our guest expert, Dr. Charles Brendan Montano. Thank you to both of you for joining us today.
All right. So, Brendan, welcome to our podcast. It's great to have you.
My pleasure, George.
We're going to start off with a case from my clinic, which may be very similar to patients that you're seeing as well. And this is a gentleman, a 72-year-old gentleman, Mr. McMillan, who's actually a high school principal. Still working, came to our memory clinic together with his wife and daughter. The family had some concerns about his recent memory over the past maybe 6 to 12 months. He was misplacing things more frequently than he had previously. He was getting more frustrated because of that. They were also concerned because he was needing more help relative to making decisions, particularly things like financial decisions, was having more difficulty kind of managing their checkbook. They cited an instance where he recently went to the supermarket to pick up a few things, and he forgot to purchase the items that his wife asked him to buy. Also, the daughter noted that at times he was getting mixed up relative to names of his six grandchildren. He was calling them by the wrong name, and that was something that was relatively recent as well. Importantly, he is a high school principal. There were no problems at work, and he was independent in all of his basic activities of daily living, appropriately dressing, grooming, bathing, hygiene, and so on. Interestingly, there was a family history where his father was diagnosed when he was in his 70s with what used to be called senile dementia. So we're not sure more specifically what that was. His own medical history, relatively common issues. He had well-controlled hypertension, hyperlipidemia, osteoarthritis, reflux disease, and allergic rhinitis. We reviewed his medications, which were basically for blood pressure, his lisinopril hydrochlorothiazide, rosuvastatin for cholesterol. He was taking acetaminophen for pain as needed, famotidine for his reflux, cetirizine for allergies, and he was taking a couple of supplements. He was on vitamin D3 as well as on a B-complex multivitamin. There was no history of either alcohol or substance use. On mental status evaluation, he was alert. He was speaking clearly. He was goal-directed. We did notice the look-to sign that at times he would kind of look to his wife for confirmation of certain answers that he would give. He was not depressed, not anxious, not psychotic. His vital signs were quite unremarkable. In fact, his total physical exam was unremarkable for age. Neuro exam did not show any focal findings. Interestingly, we do our smell test. He got 0 out of 3 on his smell test, but we can make of that what you wish. Other screening tests that we normally do in our clinic include the St. Louis University Mental Status, or the SLUMS, where he scored a 25 out of a maximum 30 points. His PHQ-9 screening for depression was very low, was a 2. And then the Barthel Activities of Daily Living Inventory, he was 100% independent on the Barthel, according to the family, because they filled that out. We did some routine and a couple of specialized blood tests. We did a metabolic profile, a CBC, TSH, B12 folate, homocysteine, C-reactive protein, All of these were within normal limits. We also did a screening brain MRI. Again, it was unremarkable. There was some small vessel disease subcortically, but no focal findings of any sorts. So I'm sure you've seen, you know, many people like Mr. McMillan. So I'm just curious, you know, what are your thoughts about this case, and what would be next steps that you might take, and what are the therapeutic options that you might consider if you had someone like Mr. McMillan in your practice?
I really appreciate your presentation and how thoroughly you evaluated Mr. McMillan, because that's what an internist would do as well. You know, we look carefully for anything that could contribute to an early dementia, including something we call pseudodementia, which is depression. And as you carefully pointed out, his PHQ-9 was only a 2. So we know it's not in that category. And most of a really thorough evaluation of his complete metabolic profile, including homocysteine and everything else, was perfectly normal. Some small vessel disease would be considered normal at his age. So you wouldn't be thinking of a serious vascular dementia. Fact that he had a history, I think, it points to a minimal clinical impairment here in his cognition. And he has a family history of something like you mentioned, we used to call senile dementia, which in fact is more likely to be Alzheimer's disease. About 70% of our dementia patients are Alzheimer's. So I would be very concerned about the possibility of this gentleman, without any other explanation, and in a thorough physical and looking at his other drugs and everything else, I'd sure want to do more thorough evaluation. He may very well be a candidate for trying a medication like a monoclonal antibody to try to slow down a potential Alzheimer's disorder. And I think in order for us to be able to know that, we're going to need specialty consultation, if possible, either with really good geriatrician, geriatric psychiatrist, such as yourself, perhaps a geropsychologist, certainly a neurologist, if available, and get some imaging, and in particular, even look at, you know, possibly a monoclonal antibody, because we know that the newer ones have some beneficial effects in terms of slowing this process down, along with, of course, the usual medications that we use, the acetylcholinesterase inhibitors, et cetera.
Yeah. So it sounds like you would be, you know, very aggressive in diagnosing and treating Mr. McMillan, who seems to be, by all accounts, in the very earlier stages. And we do talk more and more about mild cognitive impairment, or MCI, due to Alzheimer's disease, as well as kind of very early Alzheimer's dementia. So a question that I had is, how are the primary care healthcare providers doing in diagnosing patients early?
The short answer is probably majority of them not that well, because we're thinking this is a chronic degenerative disease. And, you know, there are some modifiable risk factors, which are important, but not that many that are able to help that much. And we haven't had good treatment that really can modify the disease until recently. So that being said, we haven't been in a rush to make the diagnosis, and we haven't really thought about how important it is that these folks, if in fact they do have Alzheimer's, get early evaluation and treatment.
Are there new guidelines for screening in primary care that might help in kind of diagnosing patients earlier? I think you mentioned that having a treatment that may be disease modifying could spur clinicians to want to make an earlier diagnosis.
You know, George, I'm going to throw that back to you, because I'll be honest, Our usual family practice and internal medicine society and so forth, as far as I know, have not published new guidelines. That doesn't mean that they aren't there. I mean, it's hard to keep up with the literature these days, and it's very possible that there may be some new guidelines. I do know that early detection is key here. I'm sure if this is what I suspect, early Alzheimer's, you probably got him into a clinical trial, or if not, at least a use of some of the newer agents that are available now.
So, Brenda, so how important is the kind of the annual Medicare kind of wellness exam, which I know that it does incorporate cognitive screening?
Yeah, absolutely. We do it for everyone. And we do know that Alzheimer's disease becomes much more prevalent with age. And starting over the age of 65, and it can be earlier, but happens to be a time when that wellness exam is done. And it's a very important thing to do some kind of evaluation of mental status. This disorder is, I believe the sixth leading cause of death in the elderly. It's a major problem. And without having a high index of suspicion and looking at doing cognitive evaluation with at least a fairly brief 10-12 minute test like the mini mental status or the Montreal cognitive assessment, MoCA, you've got to do, we do this now with every one of our wellness visits. It's imperative.
Yes, I was going to ask you about screening tests that you use. And you mentioned a couple in particular. I think some of our listeners maybe know that the Folstein MMSE, the mini mental, is copyright protected. And theoretically, one has to pay a copyright fee, a use fee, every time it's administered. But the ones that are most used in general practice, you mentioned the MoCA, the Montreal cognitive assessment. And throughout the VA system, they utilize a test that we actually developed, the St. Louis University Mental Status, also known as the SLUMS, which is a 30-item screen very similar to the MoCA. And that can also be obviously utilized. Now, one of the things that may be challenging, I think, in the primary care arena, and correct me if I'm wrong, is when to refer patients and how you interact with various specialists. And is it easy to refer, or what are some of the barriers to referring to specialists that you are encountering?
Well, at a minimum, in our community, the barriers that I'm experiencing are those that others I've heard are as well, unless they live in a large urban area. And that is the time that it takes to get in to see a neurologist. We have wonderful neurologists, but they are very, very busy. And it would take an average of 3 months for us at least, and this is in our community, to get Alzheimer's evaluation, with proper neuroimaging as well, for the most part. Many of us are doing, as part of our evaluation, we do an MRI or a CAT scan to make sure there's nothing else going on that we can evaluate. You've already done that in this case. So, I would say a neurologist would be an ideal person to get to, or get them into a clinical research trial, which is also available. And there are about 150 drugs right now being evaluated, at least, plus or minus, for intervention in Alzheimer's as disease modifiers. I think the problem really is access.
Given that, we're very same in the St. Louis area. In fact, it may take up to 6 months as a new patient to get an appointment either with a geriatric psychiatrist or a neurologist. Okay. So because of that, do you think that more primary care healthcare providers are doing the evaluation and providing treatment in their own practice, or are they still not comfortable with that?
I don't think there's been enough discussion among us in that regard. It's slow to take hold, but technology is rapidly advancing, and I'm hoping that this telecast, this podcast as well, will have some impact on my peers as well, because we do need to look at other options, inclusive of biomarkers and things that are available now. Quest has AD Detect biomarker. It's not been supported that much yet by the associations, our associations, and it's not part of the usual workup. But these are quantifying as well. It's also PET scans that are important. You know much more about that, I'm sure, than I do, but amyloid PET scans and p-tau scans that are important. So this is the beginning of a paradigm shift, no question. And we need to get on top of it fast.
Yeah, and I think you're bringing up a very important point. And I would imagine that you're in a smaller community, many healthcare providers that are in more rural areas are really hoping for FDA approval of a blood-based biomarker. But as of yet, we don't yet have an FDA-approved blood-based biomarker for screening, which would be very valuable, obviously, if that biomarker is negative as far as what the next step should be. But as a primary healthcare provider, let's assume that you refer to a specialist. What do you see your role as far as part of the kind of the multidisciplinary care approach, as well as, you know, your role in interacting with the patient and with the family?
Well, and that's it. It's the interaction that we have. I have really modified how I look at this disorder. It is a shared disorder among family members and between family members. If there is one significant other, a husband or a wife or a child that is now bearing the brunt of the disability that they're experiencing with their loved one, it's so important to watch carefully and interview them every single time that the patient comes into your office, and see them frequently. Point them to the Alzheimer's Association for guidance. That can be invaluable, even in terms of getting them prepared for the eventual, almost always eventual need to go into a tertiary care facility, which is as the disease progresses. And the average time that it takes to progress is around 4.5 years to death. So this is a very serious illness that rapidly causes decline of whomever is saddled with it, and the caregivers are so frequently burned out. And if we can do things to help them as well with the patient, and keep that patient at home as long as possible, everybody wins.
Yeah, so it sounds like you're really at the center of everything, and you're maintaining your contact with the patient, with the family. You're interacting with the specialist or specialists that maybe are working with you, particularly with the new disease-modifying therapies. Now, how aware are primary healthcare providers about the disease-modifying therapies? And if they're aware, what are the major concerns that they have about them?
Yeah, you know, the very first one that was launched, I think it's been, as you and I were discussing, removed already because it had very little clinical beneficial effect. It's a monoclonal antibody, and that was aducanumab, I believe. That was the first, and, you know, we all looked at it and said, oh, you know, it's absurdly expensive. When it came out, it was around $58,000. Then it was reduced to $28,000. So these are large numbers. And, you know, you wonder, how are people going to be able to pay? But now the field is opening up. We've got lecanemab and another one, I believe, called donanemab. Is it donanemab?
Donanemab, right.
Yeah, you know, these are much more likely, if used early, to slow down the development of this disorder up to 27% with lecanemab in the first 15 months. So
18 months, yeah.
Is it 18 months? Wow. But that's a significant slowdown, isn't it?
So you think primary healthcare providers are aware of this?
No.
But what are their concerns? They're not aware.
I don't think
so. They need more education.
They need a lot
more education. Are they concerned about side effects, about monitoring, screening, and so on?
Well, we haven't been detailed in that sense. We really need more information. Even in my own little world, and I do see detail reps, I haven't been fully detailed by the people that are out there.
Sounds like a window of opportunity. So believe it or not, Brendan, our time has rapidly evaporated. So do you have any kind of final kind of key takeaways about the role of primary healthcare providers vis-a-vis early diagnosis and early intervention for either MCI due to Alzheimer's disease or early Alzheimer's disease?
Yeah, I think we have to really think, number one, the majority of people with Alzheimer's disease are going to present with a prodrome around the early 60s, and it's going to particularly get worse over the next 10 to 15 to 20 years. So it goes up, the risk. And with that, we need to be more vigilant and really look for this disorder as something we can impact and do something about. We didn't have treatment before. Now we have treatment, imperfect as it may be. We have treatment. So the takeaway for me is look at the Alzheimer's disease unit of the caregiver as well. Have them assist you and work with them if they're depressed as well, because they need to be in good shape for your patient to be in good shape, along with the possibility of getting this diagnosis early as possible. Minimal clinical impairment. Early Alzheimer's disease. If we can be effective with this, we can make a real difference in people's lives. And if I'm not mistaken, we're going up, doubling the incidence of this disorder by 2050.
Well, we'll see. But hopefully we'll have an intervention that will limit the rise. But thank you very much, Brendan. It's been great having you.
George, it's always a pleasure. It's really an honor to work with you.
Thank you, Dr. Grossberg and Dr. Montano, for this very insightful conversation, primarily in the PCP space and managing MCI and early AD. And thanks to all of you for joining us. We hope you'll tune in to the remaining episodes in the series to hear more on the latest developments in the diagnosis and treatment of MCI due to early AD. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group, who, in support of improving patient care, is jointly accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education, the Accreditation Council for Pharmacy Education, and the American Nurses Credentialing Center to provide continuing education for the healthcare team. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. And thank you to Lilly for providing an educational grant for this activity. Have a wonderful day.